Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Living Raw Radio, and this is your host, Geeta Sidhu Rob, coming to you this evening to talk about, we're going to talk about what we're really good at talking about. We're going to talk about the fact that people get stressed, and the more stressed they get, the more they look for a solution. And the more that they look for a solution, the more that you have to get raw in order to uncover the solution. I know, it sounds really corny. But you know, you really do. You have to get down to what stresses you, what's causing the problem for you, what is it that doesn't work for you? Because if you can work that out, then you have a solution. You can implement it, you can make it work, and you can see what happens going forward. Now, sometimes that doesn't help you very much. So you look for other solutions and you think, okay, how about if I change this? How about if I change this? I mean, personally, I try chocolate biscuits quite often and thought, how about if I just try chocolate biscuits and I'll see if that works? And you know what? It didn't work. I was completely horrified. So then I had to go find something else. Cake didn't work either. And then I had to get serious. And I found that I had at different stages in my life to look for different things. So if you come to a person, you know, like you have watersheds, I think. You have certain watersheds. They used to call it, it's a well-known phenomenon. They used to call it things like the seven ages of man and going, that's why you have a teenage, you have a midlife crisis, because each element of life and aging that you go through kind of has its own trials, it has its own tribulations. And in modern life, where things change so much more than it did for our parents, for example, and for our grandparents, we have different life experiences we go through. And we have to find coping mechanisms to deal with all of these things. I mean, what was my watershed, if I think about it? Going to school is a watershed. Coming out of school is a watershed. Going to university is another one, right? And when you are looking at how you, I don't know, your first date's a watershed. Your first relationship's a watershed. Your first divorce is really a watershed. The one that says, we're not going to do it again. There's lots of watersheds. I mean, you know, what did you do to find your way through your watersheds? I don't know. I think that there are different things that you can and can't do. I found that, I read a lot, and I found that that was my form of escapism, that if I could escape, then I find it easier to cope with the whole place. I have my best friend eats a lot. She looks at a stressful situation and it looks back at her in the shape of food, frankly. She sits and eats her way through the entire process. My ex looked at stress and back at him looked a bottle of whiskey, and that was kind of what worked for him. My teenage son looks at stress and what looks back at him is his computer, and he thinks that's great. That's exactly how he wants to cope. So who are we to judge? I mean, you know, whatever works, that's fine. Because if it works for you and this is what works, I think you should do it. As long as it doesn't hurt anyone, doesn't cost you too much money, and you don't put on, you know, too much weight because buying a new wardrobe is deeply boring, then that's all good for me. The thing about change, really, is that in my experience, you tend to find that women embrace change a lot more, and they embrace it in their lives and their personas and in their friendships more. I'm not sure why that is. And I think that comes down to a couple of things. I think it's because they can talk to their friends and they say, you know, I don't like this. I don't like where I am. I don't like how I feel. I don't like him. I don't like her. And you get instant feedback because your friends will sit there and say, well, you know, I like him. I like her. I think you're wrong. I think you're right. Let's go get drunk or whatever it is that your friends say for you. But being able to air your emotions almost forces you into some kind of situation. It used to be that when you get broke up marriages, it was almost always the women that left. And even now, I think it's unusual for men to leave relationships because they tend to leave to go to someone else, whereas women will embrace change just for itself. So in NOSH today, we get a lot of women writing into us saying, you know, I don't like what I'm doing and I want to change. I don't know how to do it. And when we ask them why they want to change or what they're doing, because, you know, we deal with food, we deal with health, we deal with wellness. What we're saying to them is, what stresses you out right now? What stresses are you under? Why are you stressed? What's causing these problems? And we're finding that what they're saying is that they're finding it difficult to manage where they are today. And if they're finding it difficult to manage where they are today, they kind of think that if they go somewhere else, it will be easier for them to live with what they're doing. And, you know, it's like, is it the turtle or the tortoise? You carry your back. You carry your whole life on your back. It goes where you're going. So you can change every situation you're in, but you're not going to change basically who you are, and you'll take yourself with yourself. So, I mean, I've always found that a really interesting concept. And when I came from a really traditional background, and you kind of were supposed to do what you were meant to do, when you were meant to do it, and how you were meant to do it. And if you didn't do that, it was quite difficult. And I found that going through change for me was very hard, because I could only go through change on certain rules and regulations that I've been taught. You have to do this, your family is this, you are this, your reputation is that, your behavior must be like that. And I kind of didn't get very far. I got to my early 20s and thought, this is just such rubbish. I can't cope with change and these regulations. One thing or the other has to go. Either I don't change and I slowly die, or I change, but then I can't do what I'm expected to do. And I don't know how many of you have felt like that, but it's a choice that we have to make again and again. And then if you're a woman, you've got to add to that the layer of being a mother. You've got to add to it the layer of being a wife or a partner, the layer of being a friend. But those two things add a huge complexity to the situation, because whose happiness do you put first? Yours? Theirs? Somebody else's? We could find a random person to put their happiness first too. But it's like the British Airways, you know, the airlines, when they have the oxygen mask. Who comes first? You put the mask on your face first, and then you go to help the person sitting next to you. And we don't do that as women. It's just not culturally bred into us. So we find ourselves putting up with huge amounts of stress. We find ourselves putting up with huge amounts of rubbish, and sometimes abuse, and sometimes difficulty. And you say, why are you doing that? Why are you living in this life? Why are you staying here? And you're saying, well, it's because it's for the kids. It's because I'm too scared to be on my own. It's because I don't know what I would do if I didn't have this to do. And I'm not judging that. I mean, I'm a really, really, I've done those things myself, and I'm a great believer in the fact that you should try and take the easy way out as long as possible, until suddenly you wake up one day and realize it's not the easy way out. And it's been really, really painful, because you have to pay consequences, unexpected consequences that you didn't think of. So you can stay in an unhappy marriage and not think that it makes any difference to you, but it is. It's making you sick. It's making your kids unhappy. It's bringing you out in a rash. Or you can be in a job you really hate. Your hair starts to fall out. You lose weight. Or you gain loads of weight because you just eat so much. These are all things that we do as coping mechanisms. So my guest today is somebody who I find fascinating, because I went through a divorce, and I don't know what I think my coping mechanism was to yell really, really loudly for about a year and a half every time something went wrong. I dealt with it badly. I'm hoping the children will forget as they get older. And I worked. I worked all the time because it just kept me busy. So I didn't have massively intelligent coping mechanisms, I don't think. But, you know, there are people that find better ways to do it. There are people that you know, can cope better. They look for other solutions. They look for how, you know, they can work with their lives better. So today's guest is an amazing woman, and Emma went through personal trials and tribulations, and she was a mother, and she found that she just needed to find different strategies to cope with her life. And Emma became a Buddhist. Now, I'm Indian, and that never occurred to me. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know how to look to go and become a Buddhist, because there wasn't anybody in my vicinity of friends that was a Buddhist. So possibly that's why it never came up. But, and you know, what did that mean? There were people that wear orange and sing, and there were people that don't do that, because, like, I employ a Buddhist who is deeply hip and trendy, and she's 26, And so where in that would I have found some comfort? I don't know, but I know a woman who does. And Emma will come on and hopefully is out there and is going to come and have a chat with us about this. Is Emma there?
Hi, I am here. Hello.
Yay! There was a minute there where I thought, oh my God, I've lost Emma.
No, I'm here.
Hi, did you get to hear some of my intro?
I did. I heard all of it, and it's great. It was great.
Well, no, it was a very round segue around this happens to everyone.
Yeah.
And yet, can you tell me a little bit, because you were an actor in your when you were younger, right?
Yes, I started acting, I think, at about 18. And I was very fortunate. I did a lot of telly and film, and I was with the National for a year. And then my husband and I split up. And because I was always filming away, I just decided that, you know, I had two small children, and I didn't want to leave them. So I was very fortunate that voiceovers for TV and radio commercials took over. And I was able to do that.
What, sorry, say that again, Emma. What took over?
Voiceovers. Voiceovers for radio and TV commercials.
But you make that sound effortless. Sorry, there's a whole story in there. So you were acting and you were traveling a lot.
I was acting and I was you know, because you go on location and I had actually, because the children were quite little, I actually tried to wind down doing as much because I wanted to be at home with them. And I
how old were they?
Oh, well, when my husband and I separated, my son was 3 and my daughter Sadie was 4 and a half, nearly 5. So they were very little. And
that's
so,
really tiny, isn't it?
That's very tiny. That's very little. So I just, I wasn't happy at the time, so I didn't really want to go off and leave them. And I kind of needed to be at home with them. So I was able, luckily, amazingly, fortunately, I did a voiceover for a TV commercial just as a test for someone. And the client
loved it. What made you think
of it?
They just came and said, would you do a voiceover for this?
They said, would I do this test for them? So I did. But the clients liked it, and they used it. So I thought, oh, gosh, you know, that's quite good. That's a good way of earning a bit of money, staying in the business, but actually just popping up to London because we lived in the country, popping up and down from London and not actually being away from the kids. So it was great.
Oh, fantastic. And how long for example, voiceovers, how long is a job? Is it like an hour, half an hour? Is it longer? And how often would you work in a week?
Well, you know, you get booked for an hour and sometimes a bit more. But generally, you're out in about 20 minutes. Oh, I know. I mean, amazing. You have no responsibility other than walking in, doing the best you can do in that time and doing what you hope they want. And then leaving and then thinking, thank you. You know, it's a terrific thing to do. And it's also keeping your hand in, you know, with work. And I suppose, you know, I was up in London most days working, which is lovely. Very fortunate to be doing that.
Well, that's just amazing. Well, it's not like often that you get a voiceover artist anywhere near you. So I just thought I'd take the opportunity to find out how it works.
It's got to be
the most unusual profession.
I know. It's a silly job, really, because you kind of, especially, well, for me, as I live in the country, I sort of, it takes me an hour and a half maybe sometimes to get into London. I'm there for 20 minutes, do my day's work, and I'm out again. And it's terrific. I mean, I'm really fortunate, really, really fortunate. And I love doing it. And you meet some lovely people, and it's fun.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. Well, yes, I'm going to look up some voiceover agencies tomorrow morning as soon as we start and see how that whole thing works. I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah.
And you have really a really melodious voice.
thank you. Well, my father is a broadcaster and has been for many, many years and is still, at the age of nearly 87, still has a radio show with Radio 2. And so I think it's in the family that we have, you know, we're lucky we can have a voice that we can use, you know, so that.
Yeah, and also you've got the background, haven't you? So you're all kind of in the same thing and it doesn't hold that much terror.
That's right. Well, sometimes it does. It just depends what you're doing. Sometimes you can be doing something and it's a bit terrifying, but not normally.
So we're going to go to break in about a minute, and I just wanted, before we go, tell me, so really what we're talking, I mean, and it is personal, and so if there's anything that you feel is too personal, tell me to get stuffed, but I just want to understand how you clearly went, when did you first become a Buddhist, and really why? Could you just give me an idea of the circumstances leading up to you thinking, okay, this is something I'm now going to think about?
Well, my sister, Joanna, she practiced Buddhism for about 5 or 6 years before I started. And I always thought, you know, wonderful for Jo, terrific, but, you know, no thank you, not for me.
Why did you think that?
Well, I don't really know. I think ignorance. And also, my life was, you know, going along very nicely and everything was, you know, I don't think I felt I had a need for it. I've never really been a particularly religious person. Our background is we're Jewish. But I've never really felt that I was anything, really. I was just sort of part of the universe. And but when my husband and I split up, and actually, you know, you talking earlier about that it's normally, I think you said it's very often the woman that leaves, but or the man leaves if there is somebody else, and that is what happened. That's what happened with me. My ex left.
Oh, sorry.
Well, actually, it was turns out to be one of the best things that could have ever happened.
Yes, I feel like that too.
Yeah, but at the time, it was really, really tough. And I had these two gorgeous little people, you know, my son and daughter, my oldest son and daughter. And so, anyway, I was in a, you know, I was in a bad way. I wasn't quite sure why we'd split up. And I also thought, was he coming back? Or I really didn't know. And I was in a bad way. And my sister Joanna said to me, Emma, if you want to change your life, chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. And I thought, okay, I'll do anything. You know, I'll do whatever. So
Okay. Say, just do me a favor and say that again, but slowly.
The chant?
The chant.
Yeah. It's Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. And you just chant that over and over again.
How did it feel when you first started doing it? Did you feel silly?
Yes, I felt really silly. Actually, to be completely honest, what I did first of all was I have a horse, and I would go out on my horse, and I would be riding through the woods, nobody else around, so I would be chanting on my horse. And then I thought, and I'd also be doing it in the car, and I'd be sitting in a traffic jam, and I'd be sitting there chanting. And then I thought, actually, it would be a really good idea if I could just sit still somewhere and just chant, not moving, not riding, not driving. And I did. I don't think it was silly. I felt self-conscious, I think, to begin with.
Yeah. I think that's what I meant. I felt silly, meaning.
Yes. No. I know what you meant. Yeah, and you're right. You do feel kind of self-conscious. However, the effect it had on my life very quickly was so tremendous that I soon kind of learned more about the practice and what the actual practice involved. And, it, you know, it did and has. I mean, there's no way 23 3 years later, I'd still be practicing if I hadn't had the most amazing benefit and changes in my life, and know that that's also affected other people, because it's not just for oneself. It's like the
family. You're a mother. It's everybody around you, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like you throw the pebble in the pond and you get the ripple effect.
Oh, my God. So we're going to go to break. Mm-hmm. And when we come back, we're going to find out actually what literal effects it had in your life. And I'm going to make you do that chant thing again, because I like how it made me feel. It vibrated inside when you said
okay.
it. So it's Living Rural Radio, and this is your host, Geeta Siddharob, with Emma, who's going to do a chant again when we come back. Thank you, and we'll speak to you in a second.
Bloated? Is your energy levels really low? Do you find everything that you eat goes straight to fat? My name is Candice, and I am the naturopathic nutritionist at Nosh Detox. I'm here to tell you that your body needs a rest. If that sounds like you, you are ready to try a Nosh Juice Fast. A juice fast is the most natural way for your body to detox, while providing you all the life-saving minerals and vitamins that your body needs and craves. From beginners to advanced juices, we have all the options that may be available to you or suited to you. Call me on 0845-257-6674 or go to noshdetox.com and click on the right program for you. I'm right here to help you and support you. Thank you.
Nosh Detox is an award-winning company for your ultimate health improvement. Nosh Detox system works on all areas of the body, having dealt with thousands of clients whose health dramatically improved within days. For more details, visit noshdetox.com. noshdetox.com.
Welcome back, and it's Living Rural Radio with your host, Geeta Siddharob. And with me tonight, I have a brilliant woman called Emma. And Emma is talking to me about, well, Emma, I was going to say, because I put you down as Emma Jacobs, but you're also Emma Gregson-Williams.
Yes.
Which one do you prefer, or is it just that one's your married name and one's your working name?
Exactly. Jacobs is my working name, and Gregson-Williams is my married name.
So we're talking about how you turned into Buddhism, basically, from feeling really, really, lost and bereft and a very difficult time for you when you were there with two small children, and because your sister was a Buddhist. And you did that chant. I mean, you said the words, which I thought were really interesting. I wanted to get you to say them again. But what I was finding really interesting is that you said that when you saw your sister as a Buddhist, there was a place where you just thought, gosh, no, not me. But did you ever, I mean, it's not like you visibly see signs of Buddhism, is it? Because as you said, you aren't the people that wear the orange rose and things. So how did your sister's Buddhism manifest itself for you to understand she was Buddhist, if that makes sense?
I think actually I didn't really know an awful lot about it. It was out of total ignorance. And I think it was, she'd go to meetings, I think, because there's so many people actually in Britain that practice this Buddhism, as there are all over the world. And mm-hmm. you go to meetings and you can go to, there are all sorts of things happening that you can go to. And I think I just thought, I don't know, I mean, I did see that her life was, had really opened up and things were moving and happening the way she wanted them to. So that was all great. But I think I actually felt, I don't think it was really on a reflection of Joanna. I think it was more a reflection on me thinking, my life's great as it is. I don't need anything. And you kind of don't know what's around the corner. So, or I certainly didn't.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that it was actually, yes, it was more a reflection of me, not Joanna.
So are there different kinds of Buddhism?
There are loads of different kinds of Buddhism, actually. Buddhism is quite an umbrella word. And I think a lot of people, understandably, think of Buddhism as, you know, the people who will shave their heads, wear, you know, orange robes and be a monk.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, as I keep saying, I'm Indian. So in theory, you'd expect me to know more, and I don't. Frankly, I mean, I know that there are Buddhists that do the Indian chant, the orange robe chanting thing, and then I have my designer, who's been Buddhist since she was 16 and is vegetarian, and that's the only manifestation. So, what kind of Buddhist are you, and what is there a difference between the various kinds of Buddhists?
Well, there is.
A stupid question. Clearly, there are differences. I suppose I'm asking, what's the difference with you, and is it a sect or is it a what do you call it?
It's an organization called the Soka Gakkai, which is value-creating society. And and we are the back in sort of 1222, this wonderful man called Nichiren Daishonin, who is somebody that we read all his readings, and everything that he wrote back then kind of really works for us all now. And there are lots of letters he wrote to his followers then. And it's extraordinary. But it's very much for anybody and everybody, from, you know, lawyers, doctors, road sweepers, actresses, housewives.
Yeah, it's a great leveler.
It is, absolutely. So it's a great leveler. And it's, you know, it's, I think what attracted me most of all to it is this practice is about responsibility 100% for your own life. And I think very often we go through life kind of blaming other people, other things for a situation, whatever that situation might be, you know, if it hadn't have been for him or if it hadn't been for her, this wouldn't have happened, or, you know, whether it's in a relationship of any sort or anything really. And actually, very, you know, really it's down to us. And I think that's what really appealed to me, rather than praying to a god or to something. This Buddhism is all about you and taking responsibility for your own life.
Now, why would that make you feel better? Surely, if you're feeling really appallingly bad and you've been left and you've got two small kids, doesn't it just make you feel better to want to kill people?
No, actually. It kind of empowered me, thinking, actually, I changed my life. You know, I did.
Actually, say that last bit again?
I was saying that it empowered me. Because I then thought, I can change my own life. I can, you know, I can be in the driving seat. I can do this. It's down to me. And actually, my sister gave me this just sort of six lines of something that our the president of our organization, who is in Japan, he wrote something, and Joanna found it and gave it to me. Can I read it to you?
Yes. Please, I'd love you to. If I ask you to repeat something, it's just because there's a little bit of static, and it would be lovely. We can clean that up later, but it'd be lovely to hear it all.
Okay. It is, anyone would think that victory is impossible, and that's probably how you feel right now. But don't forget this marvelous Gohonzon we have. It has the power to transform what you'd normally think impossible into something possible. Those who give up before they try, thinking that it's impossible, don't really know the power of the mystic law. Only people who can bring forth the mystic law's power can succeed at anything they try. And that made me think, yeah, you know, I'll have a bit of that.
Wow, that's awesome.
And
put that up on a wall and look at it every day.
I know. I did look at it every day, thinking, I can change my life. I can be happy, because that's, you know, what we all want to be is happy, and create happiness for others. You know.
So you looked and thought, okay, here I am, and I'm not. But you know, that takes a lot of courage. It did, because in order for you to work out, you had to stop and think, I'm miserable, I'm unhappy, and not use any stress avoidance tactics. Which, as I said in the beginning, frankly, you know, I did try chocolate, and then I moved on to cake, and I found that none of it really helped. But I made a dedicated effort. So you were really brave, and I think you're glossing over that, because you sort of looked at it and thought, no, I'm really miserable, and I don't like this, and there must be a way to make me feel better. Mm. And as so often happens, then the universe does give you something that you think, okay, I can do this now. But you still took charge, didn't you? And that's from you. You took that first step.
I did. And I think it was because I just felt that, well, my mother and my father divorced when I was quite young. And my mother's mother wasn't their marriage wasn't very happy, and also a very big thing in our Buddhism is about karma, about things that you've done in the past, you will reap the benefits or not benefits, you know, in at some point, and it's about changing one's karma, because you don't know what you did in your last lifetime, for instance. And, you know, there is a saying in Buddhism, you know, if you want to know what your last life was like, look at your life now. So if you're suffering in one particular area in your life, then maybe in your last lifetime, for instance, or maybe in this lifetime, maybe you haven't made some very good causes. So in that area. So I thought, well, you know, there is a theme here. And my sister also, she had split up from the father of her two children. Mm. And I just thought, there is very much a theme running through this, our family. And I thought, I have got to change it. I have absolutely got to change it.
That's amazing. So what you did is you looked at this and you thought, right, hang on a sec. I'm looking at all of this, and I actually refute this. I've decided that this is not going to be my life, and you kind of drew a line in the sand and thought, I'm going to try and change this.
I did, but I have to say, you know, there was an awful lot of stress, and there was an awful lot of unhappiness, and, you know, it wasn't that I was this warrior, but I could just get on with my life. I was deeply, deeply, I was sort of, you know, broken, really. And so,
well, because you would have been, because if someone leaves you, what you end up doing is questioning what you did wrong, don't you?
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter if you didn't do anything wrong. It's almost better if they leave for someone than for no one, because if there's at least someone, you can find somebody to blame almost. But if you get left, you're never going to look. You're always going to kind of, and then you get wary of relationships, because you think, well, if I have another relationship, will you leave too? Am I prepared to commit to this?
Yeah.
Knowing that this might happen. And then you go through with sort of one eye closed, always thinking, I'm not going to commit 100%. I'm not going to commit 100%.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. And you can take sort of a lot of luggage with you through life that you might not actually want to take. So I just really felt, you know, I just knew that if there is wonderful Buddhist practice that can change your life, and that you can get into the driving seat, and it changes your life and it can really affect all the people around you, I thought, well, I'm going to go for it, because I've got nothing to lose. You know, and I thought, well, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I did instantly, as I was started chanting, I really did feel the difference in my life. I mean, I used to be very much, which I kind of still am, but I can keep a lid on it a bit. I'm very moved by my heart.
Sorry, just say that last bit again. You're very what with your heart?
I'm very ruled. My heart rules my life sometimes. My heart, I'm very...
Yeah.
And I very quickly started to be able to use my sort of wisdom rather than just my heart. And that for me was huge because I felt more in control. And then, of course, the minute you change or one changes, your environment changes. Things change
too. And it's almost a miracle, isn't it, how that happens?
It is. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely right. It's fantastic.
It's also the speed with which it happens is the thing that I'm often left gasping because I sort of think, hang on a minute, I was there and then, that, right?
Yeah, it does. And I mean, for a long time, I was hoping that my marriage would, my husband and I would get back together again. But I kept being shown things. I kept finding things out or being shown things in that were sort of saying, well, are you sure you really want this? Because look at this. And because I didn't really understand, I didn't understand what was quite going on. So I felt with the practice, with my chanting, and there, I felt that it was really kind of showing me what she wants. And of course, in the end, after quite a long time, but I really got there. I realized, no, this is absolutely not what I want, and I felt so incredibly fortunate that that was a huge turnaround. That from where I started from.
There's a place where you looked around and thought, no, wouldn't have you back if you came back. We're covered in honey, sprinkled with chocolate, carrying marshmallows.
And the thing about the practice is that, you chant for there's things that you really need and want in life. You can really chant for them. It might not happen the way you think it will.
Tell me how that works. What does that mean, you can chant for the things that you want in life?
Well, the practice is that you have practice, the whole practice it's like the faith, practice, and study. And faith is something that you gain, and practice is you chant and you take part in meetings and things. And then you study, because obviously there's lots of writings that Nichiren Daishonin, who I mentioned earlier, wrote to his followers. Who the samurais at the time and various people back in 1200 and whatever. And but the practice is you chant and it opens up your life and you kind of get this out. This might sound all a bit sort of airy-fairy, but...
No, I'm so with you on this.
Well, you get into kind of the rhythm of life, really. If you're off the railway tracks, sometimes you feel like your life is off the railway track. Well, this puts your life back on. And so for others, if you have somebody who's ill in your family or if you're not well or...
So, Emma, hang on, sorry to interrupt. So what you're saying is that, for example, that if I'm worrying about something, like, I don't know, I have a teenage whose son is going to go into O-levels or something.
Yeah.
And can I, and it is very prosaic, I agree, but on the other hand, that's a huge issue for me because it matters to me how he does. I think I care more than he does. In fact, I'm pretty positive about that.
Right.
If I sit here and instead of worrying about it, I can be holding an intention for his best good to come to him or for him to be happy and well and all that and to do well. I'm Indian. It would have to be holding the intention for him to do well. I think otherwise I'd probably die of shock. and then I would chant for that.
Yes. Yes, you can chant for anything you want. Anything you want in life. And there are two kinds of benefits. You get the job, you get the boyfriend, you get the house, you get the car, whatever it is. But there's the non-conspicuous benefits, which actually the more important ones, which are the changes, the sort of human revolution that we call, the real things that you change in our lives, that are deep in our lives. Like, I am now, for instance, I'm really, really happy and in my marriage, and I've got a wonderful, wonderful marriage now.
Yeah, I'm going to come to that. I'm going to go to another break, and then I'm going to talk. What I was going to ask you, actually, was if you could think, I want to go to a break, and when we come back, do you have, say, three or four things that you can point to and say categorically, I can say this, this, and this, these are the things that would never have happened without this or in this wonderful way.
Yes,
would you
I
do
can.
That?
I would. Thank you.
Fabulous. So it's Living Raw Radio. We're going to go for a break. And Emma and I are going to be back in just a minute or so. Speak to you soon.
Award-winning company for your ultimate health improvement. NOSH Detox System works on all areas of the body, having dealt with thousands of clients whose health dramatically improved within days. For more details, visit noshdetox.com. noshdetox.com.
Rob, your host, and I'm here with Emma. And Emma and I are having seriously the best time here because what we've done is we've been talking about Buddhism. We're talking about something how many people out there, tell me one of you that will put your hand up and go, yeah, really, no, well, okay, one of you will, that was a bad example. Let's just take lots of you. I'm just hanging myself here. You know, you just don't know about it. You know people that are Buddhist, but how often you manage to collar someone and talk to them who are as interesting as Emma and who have the nicest voice. I have to keep reminding myself I'm not meant to float off while I'm listening to her because that's bad. Now, what we're going to do is that we're going to have a chat with Emma now about, she's got like three or four specific things that she thinks made a difference, that were made different in her life just because of her being a Buddhist and because of her chanting. And it's, do you know, I've tried a lot of self-help things. I try a lot of different things because I believe that there are many, many routes to wherever we're trying to go. And I find it remarkable and I find it impressive that someone can say, look, this thing that I did led to these results. To me, that is an enormous amount of power of self-empowerment, really, that kind of power. So it's just awesome, actually. So, Emma, I might even let you talk at this stage. It's all warbling on. What do you think? What, like, three things could you turn to and go, right, first it did this, then it did this, then it did this?
Well, I think the first thing would be definitely that when I was going through my divorce, I was able to actually not look at my ex and think, you know, you utter whatever. I was able to actually look at him and think, you know, you did your very best. That was pretty ghastly in this whole situation, but for you it was your best. And I kind of knew that I'd moved so much further forward, and I kind of just didn't feel, I didn't blame him, therefore I wasn't a victim. And I think I could have very easily been a victim, but I felt, you know, and I knew that I was going to have, you know, I was a young woman and I was going to have a great life. So that was a good thing for me, not to have that sort of, to be the victim.
So you You just said that you were a young woman and you knew you were going to have a great life. How old were you?
He left when I was 30.
Whoa.
So you had
a lot of life to still live.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's... I just managed to really get myself to a point of thinking, you know, there's this whole life out there for me, and I'm so fortunate, and really turn kind of, you know, the cup wasn't half empty, it was absolutely half full, and I was going to fill it up. And so that was great, and I also did know that I did want to have another partner, relationship, marriage, whatever again. And that did take me some time, but I was able to, you know, I was fortunate enough to meet Rupert, and that was great.
How long did that take?
About 5 years. It was about five.
That's not so long.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't so long. But that was 5 years of. It was five. Yeah, it was. Yeah, maybe. Sorry, five. Yeah, five. About 5 years. 5-6 years.
That's a lot of chanting, though.
That was a lot of chanting. That was 5-6 years of a lot of chanting. And a girlfriend of mine reminded me, my husband was a teacher when I first met him, but he was a musician.
Oh, sorry, Emma, will you say that again? I want to hear it. You said a girlfriend of yours reminded you.
A girlfriend of mine reminded me that, when I first met my husband, he was a teacher, and he was a musician as well and a composer, but he was teaching. And over the years, my husband's become a film composer, and we live between Los Angeles and London now, and it's great. This girlfriend of mine reminded me, and she gave me a card that I had written many, many years when I was about 19, 20, to her,
yeah,
saying, "I love Los Angeles, and I really have a film composer." Well, I'd completely forgotten that, but when I was living in LA with my film composer husband, she sent me this card, and I just thought, you know, yeah, it does, makes complete sense, because that's what I wanted, you know, that was obviously what I really wanted in my life, and it was working. So, but that's sort of an aside, and that's quite sort of
I've got goosebumps. Really, that's not an aside.
Well,
that's like the whole principle of karma and dharma, that you sort of have free will, but along predestined paths.
Yes, I know. It is extraordinary. And I am so fortunate. And we've got a beautiful ballet dancer daughter, Saskia, who's terrific. And so we're really very fortunate. And you know, there are other things that practice, for instance, it really protects you. You know, by the chanting you really have protection as well when you practice, and from the universe, really, because you're getting so in rhythm with the universe. And I had an extraordinary experience once. I went to take Sadie, my oldest daughter, to a university, and I drove all the way there and sorted her out and spent some time there and drove all the way back, and then I had to go and pick Saskia up from my father's house. And I'd been driving for about 12 hours that day. And on the way back to our house, just with Saskia, and it was dark and it was foggy, I didn't realize, and it was completely my fault, I didn't realize that there was a T-junction coming up. I thought I was on another road. And I pulled straight out, and we had the most terrible car accident.
Oh, my God.
And it was a horrible accident. You know, we flipped over around about 3 or 4 times in the air, and
oh my God,
because this car came whacking into the side of us, into my side, fortunately. And anyway, when I was being dragged out of the car, because the wonderful people were sort of suddenly there. We were in the middle of nowhere, actually, in the country, in a field, but somehow lots of people were suddenly there. And they dragged me out of the car, and luckily, thank God, Saskia, my daughter, was fine. She was 8, and she managed to scramble, because we were upside down in the car. She managed to scramble out of the car. And it was one of the worst moments, actually. In fact, it was the worst moment of my life, because it was pitch black, and I just said, you know, darling, are you all right, once the car had stopped. not knowing if I was going to hear anything back. So she scrambled out of the car. I was dragged out of it because I'd broken my arm and hand and shoulder. And I was lying on the side of the road when I saw this guy. I saw this man standing. There were a lot of people standing and the ambulances were coming and things. And I was just lying there and I was looking up at this guy thinking, I know you. I practice Buddhism with you. And this chap called Henry. And I thought, what on earth is he doing there? Anyway, I tried to get his attention. So I thought the only thing I can do is to start chanting and maybe he'll look at me. And I did. I started chanting, but he still didn't look at me. Anyway, to cut a long story short, what had happened was dear Henry was coming down the road and it was him, poor love, that went into the side of me in the middle of nowhere, nowhere near where either of us live. And as a girlfriend of mine said, you know, if you're going to have an accident, well, we were all okay. Thank God. You know, our family, again, another sort of family karma of, we have a history of people dying young in our family. My father's brother died very young, and my brother was killed when he was only 19.
Good Lord.
So I really felt this is something that we've changed because we're okay. Saskia was okay. I was okay. And again, I really felt that, you know, because nobody could believe we got out of the car, but it was in such a mess. And, you know, so that was another situation. I really felt very, 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 very protected. So there are situations that you find yourself in and you think, wow, you know, Buddhism was quite extraordinary, really bizarre.
That's amazing. So now, well, I think I'm a bit speechless. Could you do that chant again a couple of times, please?
I can.
I love the sound of it.
It's Nam Myo Ho Renge Kyo. And when we chant Nam Myo Ho Renge Kyo, Nam Myo Ho Renge Kyo, Nam Myo Ho Renge Kyo. And then we just keep chanting. That
oh,
sound very silly.
No, but that you feel, I mean, like when you said that, I felt that in my solar plexus.
Oh.
It like vibrates.
Well, you know, when we practice, it's not, you know, you don't kind of go off into another place. I mean, sometimes you can.
No.
You do. But it's very much, it's very active. It's very, you know, because sometimes when you're feeling all sort of zenned out, sometimes it can be, but it's, you know, whatever the situation you're in, whether it's good or bad, you know, we just keep chanting. You just have to keep chanting and chanting.
Well, because it isn't good or bad, is it? It just is. It's us that face judgment.
Yeah, well, exactly. But if you know, if you're going through a really terrible situation, if you're ill or, you know, so, you know, and if one's ill and you absolutely are determined you're going to get better, and, you know, fast, the whole life, that, you know, I am absolutely going to be fit and healthy and well, because if I'm not, it has a horrible effect on everybody else around me. And I need, you know, and it's something that, you know, one would desire to have a healthy, happy life. So, you know, and so sometimes that's not easy if you're in a situation and it can be fearful and whatever else. But that's why you just chant, no matter what, you just chant. And you will get your victory, as it were. You will, you know, there's no prayer goes unanswered in this practice.
No, that's just amazing. What website can I send people to? I mean, if there are, you know, from people listening, where can we send them to get some more information?
Well, we have the most beautiful centre. It's called Taplow Court near Maidenhead.
Taplow Court, and court is Court.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, what's the website?
It's www.sgi-uk.org.
So www.sgi-uk.org.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, Emma, it's been such a privilege, honestly. Write this down and just try using it and see. I mean, you've really inspired me to use it, and I can't thank you enough for coming on and talking to us, because I know you were a little hesitant and we did slightly strong arm you.
Yeah, well,
in a nice,
I'm thrilled.
Calm Buddhist way to come on. And I'm so pleased you did, and I'm really, really grateful. I enjoyed every second of talking to you. And this is Living Raw Radio, and it's Geeta Sidhu Rob feeling really quite enlightened, I'll have you know. I'm feeling very zen and very peaceful, and I'm going to go off and terrify the cats by chanting at them. And I think you should too, and I think we should all meet here next week when we've done that, and we can all report about what it did for us. And wonderful having you. Good night, and take care.
You've been listening to a best of showcase series for Living Raw Radio. This is Nate, the producer, and I'm telling you that come next week to another live Raw Radio show with Living Raw Radio and Geeta Sidhu Rob, your host, as we explore even more of the entrepreneurial beauty and wellness that you can find by living raw. Until next week, have a great and awesome weekend.
Do you feel sluggish? Do you feel bloated? Is your energy levels really low? Do you find everything that you eat goes straight to fat? My name is Candace, and I am the naturopathic nutritionist at Nosh Detox. I'm here to tell you that your body needs a rest. If that sounds like you, you are ready to try a Nosh Juice Fast. A juice fast is the most natural way for your body to detox, while providing you all the life-saving minerals and vitamins that your body needs and craves. From beginners to advanced juices, we have all the options that may be available to you, or suited to you. Call me on 0845-257-6674 or go to noshdetox.com and click on the right program for you. I'm right here to help you and support you. Thank you.
Detox is an award-winning company for your ultimate health improvement. Nosh Detox System works on all areas of the body, having dealt with thousands of clients whose health dramatically improved within days. For more details, visit noshdetox.com. noshdetox.com.